Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Four Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure itself, life. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I like to laugh at life, too. I'm Ken Napsok. Happy to be with you. We should point out Jennifer Landa, because of the holiday recording schedule, you know, that can sometimes get in the way of life. She can't join us today, but we'll be back next week.
That is right. I wish Jennifer was here, because we're going to have a fun Other Center episode. This is going to be questions all about music. This is basically going to be Music Center, this particular episode. We've recently put a call out for questions on our Patreon as we are continuing to find our little feets after the strike, heading into this new year. We've got some great questions about Star Wars, about other pop culture, and some just questions about life, music, books, all that. So we're going to have some Q's episodes that are a mix of all those things all at once. We are recording this just a couple days after the Christmas holidays. I am still bleary-eyed and exhausted from my holiday travels, but we're planning to release this episode after the new year. So, Ken, by the time this comes out, who knows who we'll be as people? New Year's might change us.
It's like Y2K. We're all huddled around the TV. Is this it? Is this it? Is this the end?
Is it all new? Is it all different? You know, are we both going to come black and be like, we don't wear black anymore? Yeah. No, it's not a 2024 thing. We don't do that. We don't do that anymore. But happy new year to all those who celebrate and mark the new year. We are happy to be here in the future, recording from the past. We want to let you know, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles, and I assume growing, to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Crimson Climb by E.K. Johnston. We are both big fans of Kira. We've enjoyed novels by E.K. Johnston, so we are excited to read this one. We're partially recommending it to ourselves. I need to remember to pick this one up for Ken and I so we can check it out. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. We are also continuing to make our ask, and maybe, Ken, we'll have reached our ask by now. You want to go for it?
Yeah, the ask on paper is, can you help us reach 7,500 subscribers on YouTube? But the reality is we're getting very close to that, and we might have shot past it, but it doesn't change the goals. We'd like you to consider checking out our YouTube page. Yes, we're doing video content over there, meaning you can see our faces while we're recording this podcast. We understand podcast is still the number one spot for most of you, and we enjoy that. Trust us. But other content is coming, and yes, I use that content word. I'm not offended by it as much as other folks. I think there's some ramifications of the word on a big level, but you get what we're doing. And we got some stuff we're putting together. We got more live streams. Our January live stream will happen, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So am I selling it enough? Yes, I hope so. Get over there, subscribe, like, hit the notification bell, do all those things.
I love that. Yes, and our goal is 7,500 as we record. We're only about 20 away from that. So if you get there to subscribe and we're at 7,500, you don't have to be like, oh, that's great. They reached their goal. We welcome more. We'll have more goals. Mm-hmm. We'll want to go higher.
Yeah.
So please join us there. And maybe when we reach the actual new year for our actual human selves, rather than this future broadcast, maybe one of our resolutions can be to come up with a different word than content.
Mm.
Because I try to say storytelling when it's anything fictional.
Yeah.
Documentaries are even a form of storytelling.
Yeah.
I understand content is just this good umbrella term. But what's the right umbrella term for what we do? Because it's podcasts, but we're also on YouTube. It's a show.
It's a broadcast.
It's a broadcast. It's a our cast. Talkies. We're going to be putting out more talkies.
I think the content word does, it's not my favorite, and there's some definite negative connotations, but you're right. I think it's one of those words that started in a normal, or this is what it meant, space, and then it just got taken over to where the original meaning or the original tense long gone, you know, that happens in our lives, in our worlds, but I'm with you. So we have to come up with another word. We'll come up with it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just it does bug me because it ties to the fire hose of like it doesn't matter what it is. Just spray content at people so we can attach ads to it and subscriptions and all that. And I mean, for me, I think of a sandwich and you're like, if you went to a restaurant and being like, what do you want in your sandwich? Content.
Mm-hmm.
No, let's let's be a little bit more specific.
Yeah.
About delicious meat, Dijon mustard. I would like that. I don't want a content sandwich.
You know, this is a fun discussion to start another center episode. You know, like I said, I'm less offended by the word content, but if you call yourself a content creator in front of me, I'm like, the bleep you are. Like, I get really upset. Content creator is the one that upsets me more than content. I don't know why.
I'm here just with my big bowl mixing up some content. I'm going to slather it all over the internet. It'll be great. Well, welcome to Content Center, where today what we're going to do is take two questions from our patrons on Patreon. These are both, it worked out great. These were the last couple questions to grab before we remixed things. And they were both about music, which I think we've really been enjoying over all of the other center adventures. So this first one comes to us from Anthony King. Anthony says, in continuing some of the music conversations recently, I wanted to hear your thoughts on farewell tours. Are they just cash grabs at this point? Does an artist reserve the right to do a comeback whenever they want? I saw that Kiss just finished their final show on their farewell tour, and I have a hard time thinking this is really it for them. Motley Crue also famously signed legal paperwork to never tour again,
right,
only to eventually tour again. Mm-hmm. Has the integrity of these tours been ruined? I would love to hear what you all have to say on this matter. Mm-hmm. Ken, where do you begin with this? Are you a fan of farewell tours? Do they work on you as a form of advertising?
I think so, because in the summer of 1996 or spring of 1996, I saw Kiss in their farewell tour.
Are you serious?
I did. That was the Kiss show I saw. Shout out to our buddy Billy Patterson, who actually sent me a video copy of that. I got to relive the show. Poe opened up for them, and Irvine Amphitheater. I dressed as Peter Criss, and that was the final time. This was the final tour to see them. Not so much. I have a lot of thoughts on the final thing here. This is, by the way, we're always bummed when Jennifer can't join us, but this is kind of a music themed episode, and the fact that I was not going to hear Jen talking about Grateful Dead is upsetting me. I'll start here on the final.
Wow.
Thing. Yeah. Right.
I really agree.
On the final thing, like, I get it. It's definitely a marketing. Marketing approach. I sometimes believe it. You know, Elton John's final farewell performances, that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes there's health behind it. You know, fortunately, Neil Diamond had to shut it down due to health reasons, and there's some of those things. Other ones, yeah, I don't believe it as much. I think death will be the end for some of these bands, and I'm okay with it. As someone who has said no less than three times, maybe around four, that was my final stand-up comedy performance, and it's still going and hopefully stronger. Like, maybe you just don't say that. Maybe you just address what's going on in your life or your head or your heart or your soul or in your business, because some of the final farewell tours might have to do with the business side of it, and just always leave the door open. Always leave change as this X factor, or the need of money, which is sometimes, if you're in the pro wrestling world, why you come back after your final match. Mm-hmm. Looking at you, Ric Flair. But, I think that's where I start with the final conversation. Maybe just that's the word we should change. Not content. Well, content, but also final.
I love the idea of doing a super honest, this could be it tour. Like,
maybe
Guns N' Roses has basically been touring with, you know, mm-hmm. What seems like a brief break for the lockdown portion of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they started strong in like 2016 with the Not In This Lifetime tour, which I thought was such a great way to be like, we were honest. We didn't. Both Axl and Slash had said, never, ever again will we play together, with Duff being like, come on, guys, throughout the years. It happened. Everything's going great. I've seen them three times. But I love the Not In This Lifetime tour and I feel like it would be great. If I were, you know, an 80-year-old in a storied rock band, I would love to do a This Could Be It tour. You don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm 80. Mm-hmm. Take it upon yourself about whether or not this is your last opportunity to see me.
Yeah.
But I feel like in spirit, Anthony is talking about maybe slightly younger artists.
Yeah.
Anthony uses the term cash grab, which I have no problem with the way Anthony is using it in this context. I think sometimes that's one of those terms that gets thrown around, and maybe much like content, it evolves and it changes, right? Is this content just a cash grab? I feel the huge corporations who make art and entertainment, and also, hey, your sister-in-law who makes cool necklaces on Etsy, that's a cash grab too, to pay her rent. I feel like often with art, you know, unless you have some time-traveling rich Edwardian, you know, Dame Julie who is just paying for you as your patron, everybody is trying to make money for their art to try to survive. Entertainment is trying to make it continue, make money for the all of the board and all that, blah, 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 blah. But I think the way Anthony uses it is in this context is to me closer to its original intent of is what is being presented artistically to make money authentic. Because for me, when I first started hearing the cash grab, it was nobody really wants to do this. Nobody really believes in it. Mm-hmm. It's just a quick way to get money. I think maybe that term, I don't know the history of that term, but I think I first started hearing it as a young person when the 80s really blew up in terms of sequels. Wasn't a sense of like, do we have more Nightmare on Elm Street story to tell? It was, you can't stop us. We're going to make another Friday the 13th. And much like a farewell tour, we're going to announce one as a final. And then we're going to make a new one. You know, that sort of like, who cares about the actual art? Just make another one. Cash grab.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm going on and on about this is because I think that is the essential difference to me on a final tour, a farewell tour, of I don't mind if it's authentic, if the artists truly believe it is their final tour. And when you're buying a ticket, they mean it in their heart of hearts. But then something happens to change their mind or circumstances or health. Ken, I'm sure you didn't bill your stand-up as come see me because this is the last time. But when you announced it to yourself or to friends, or I don't know if you announced it to audiences in all of your various final stand-up sets, you meant it then, right?
Yeah.
You believed it.
How about that? I believed it. My soul didn't mean it. There was bigger issues and other things. And other times, yeah, you can just walk away. I know many a friend who's walked away from stand-up and they meant it because it's not where our hearts are, you know. And I've done it too. I've left other arenas or other things. Like I sometimes have like a 3-year window where my interests start kind of waning. Four Center is this absolute miracle driven by my connection to you and Jen in Star Wars, right? There's a lot of times where after about 3 years, I always want to be on Saturday Night Live, but I was like, I'm not Kenan Thompson going for 20 seasons. I'm a 3-and-out guy. Like I'm just, I think you're right. There's the integrity behind it, the meaning behind it. But when I talk about things change, like, you know, we're in this, it's not just about what changes with you. I think we're in a different era. I going back to Kiss, you know, they had the big reunion once, you know, they put the makeup back on, but that was kind of spurred on by the MTV Unplugged performances, one of the great Unplugged performances in MTV Unplugged history. There's such a thing. And that, I don't know, have the exact ages, but I think roughly I am now 5 to 6 years older than they were in that special. But it was viewed as, look at these old guys coming together to rock again. Like Ace Frehley was like 43. and that's just the way things were looked at, where, it's interesting to do the whole like, well, Harrison Ford is as old as Sean Connery was. Now he's 20 years past. We'd look at things different now. Things change. So maybe at one point you went, I guess I have to shut it down. Maybe I want to. And then you look around, you're like, Mick's still going? Enough to that. I'm rocking out. And I think that can be part of why the word final doesn't mean as much as it did back in the day.
I think there was I was having some conversations with family over the holidays about this. Rock and roll starts as such a youthful, music, like classical music. People kept doing, you know, old blues singers, old country singers, haunting bars, you know, far beyond their healthy years was well known. And then rock starts, and it's this extremely vital young person music. Even swing, you know, in big band and in the Tin Pan Alley classics, people had kept doing them into their older age at the time. Yeah. But rock felt like you got to be done doing that by when you're 30, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of all just watched as, like, I remember Rolling Stones putting out their new album in 1989, Steel Wheels. And being like, I got to get this because those guys were around when my dad was young, and he had me when he was 22. So the Rolling Stones are, they got to be on death's door. And like now, like 1989, and they're announcing a tour next year that I might go to. Cause for me, it's like, they don't have to say final tour.
don't have
Keith, everybody's expected Keith Richards to have been dead 8 times over by now, right?
Yeah. No, and rest in peace, Charlie Watts. But I saw them almost 2 years ago now. Almost 2 years ago now I saw them. And they were amazing at SoFi Stadium, one of the best concerts I've ever seen. And you're so right. It's the perception. I mean, there's a great joke in Almost Famous. I think it's Jimmy Fallon of all people delivering it, but it's a great joke of just like, come on, I'm your new business manager. I got to get you. You think the Rolling Stones are gonna be doing this at 50? We all can laugh at the joke, but that was true then. That was true. Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey singing about, you know, my generation. They thought that was it. You know, they were the youth. They're the ones in charge. Now they're the boomers. And that's so, yeah, keep rocking. Why not?
Yeah. So, yeah, a big element of this is nobody knew that rock artists in particular were just going to keep going.
Yeah.
Rocking to the grave. Yeah. And that is what is happening. So, yeah, I think your KISS example of, well, some people expected this was time, and it wasn't led to this.
Look, you know, Gene and Paul do enjoy grabbing money, and that you have the avatars that have they announced now that now there's going to be like holograms of them performing. I've been to the Rio in Vegas and played KISS mini golf. Like, they love grabbing money, but in terms of this idea, the final, it's the final when it's the final.
I feel comfortable using the term cash grab when you lay it out that way. When we got holograms and mini golf,
yeah,
I think it's okay to use. I'll allow myself the term cash grab in that circumstance. Yeah. One of my favorite retirement stories ever is Sinatra. Huge Sinatra fan. He survived four eras. He changed the face of music and I think entertainment culture. I won't go on about it, but he super popular in the 40s and then had a big dip of popularity where everybody thought he was done. He came back and redefined music, popular music, helped to define what an album is by coming up with really the idea of it shouldn't just be a collection of singles. It should be all around a theme. And a story, and I'm going to have my sad albums. I'm going to have my swinging albums. I'm going to have my travel around the world album themes. Then he starts his own record company because he doesn't like being pushed around, and that's going great. And then he rides out Elvis because that's close enough to his music. Right. It's still got a swing beat. He has Elvis on his TV show to welcome him back from the military, and then the Beatles hit. And that, and it is like a meteor event for the artists of that era of they have a hard time. Almost all of those artists managed to take something from the Beatles and turn it into a more of a Tin Pan Alley saloon song.
Yes.
But the mid to late 60s suddenly become hard for all of the popular singers of that ilk.
Mm-hmm.
And Sinatra kind of keeps going until about 68 and then just decides the year 1968 and then just decides I gotta be done. He does one final show. He does this saloon song that he'd been doing forever, this a sad sack in a bar monologue called Angel Eyes about a woman that's left him, and it ends with the lyric, "Excuse me while I disappear." And he sings the final, "Excuse me while I disappear," you know, holds it in this little trembling note, and the spotlight goes out, and MF is just gone from the stage. No bows. Like the most beautiful, artful, like if you could choose how you die,
that's how you
I would
do
sing
it.
Angel Eyes while a spotlight goes out, and it just, he's gone, right? Mm-hmm. And a beautiful, you couldn't end a career or a life more perfectly than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just gets restless of just like, I've never known anything but being a performer. I can't. And he performs up until he really physically can't. By the end there, he was, you know, reading off a teleprompter, maybe not making all of his decisions for himself, you know, not great stuff. But
yeah,
that's a long story because I love Frank Sinatra. But the point being, I think there are people who try to retire and discover, I am a performer and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Same way sometimes people, like if they lose a spouse and they're in good health, that somehow mysteriously just they go downhill a month after their spouse is gone because some people are married to performing, to entertaining, of I tried to retire and I can't.
Yeah.
This is who I am. This is what I do.
Yeah, I know. And that's okay. I think we should laugh at that. Even the marketing around Rise of Skywalker was the final Skywalker, you know, chapter here, right, in the saga. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true from a certain point of view. But there, in Anthony Daniels, remember saying, like, well, this is last time we'll be 3PO. No, it's not. And it don't worry about it being that. And the fact that, you know, we now get a chance to see him pop up for a bit in Ahsoka, that's wonderful. If he wants to voice some C-3PO toothbrush commercial, go for it. Like, I don't care. And you know, Mark coming back to be involved with the creation of Luke Skywalker for Mando, controversies aside, he was able to come back and do it. Like, that's great. That's great. We should allow for that. And we should allow for the Frank Sinatras of the world to say, all right, one more time again.
One more time. One more once again. So wrapping up our farewell to conversation, I think we have got to most of the crucial points of Anthony's question, but maybe if the integrity of these tours has been ruined, let's focus on that. Ken, if you see a farewell tour, let's say maybe it's an artist that isn't that necessarily that up there in age, but you're a fan of, is Garbage still playing? Are they still a band?
I did. I saw them last year. They were spectacular 30 years on.
So if they announced a farewell tour, would you go, oh, I got to go? Or would you, like Anthony's asking, has the integrity of these tours been ruined? Would you be like, yeah, I love you, Garbage, but I don't believe you. I'm not going to that.
No, I would definitely go because on the chance that it's true, right? That would be the reason for it. If they're deciding, you know, because again, we all would love to call our own shots. It sounds like Sinatra called his shot perfectly, but too early, in the game. No, I would. I understand it does undercut the integrity a little bit, maybe after the fact, right? If you're like, if I go to a show and it's the last time ever and I cry some tears because, wow, what a great time we got to see that. And you feel the big emotion. And then a year later, they're like, yeah, one more. Yeah, you're going to feel like, well, I just put it all the blood is on the tracks and I can't do it again. And this comes up in wrestling a lot because pro wrestling is something that more people should quit, but you can't. And I know it gets in your blood and it's something about it. And that, you know, outside of he's not a wonderful person overall. I'll just acknowledge that and caveat that. But Ric Flair, one of the greatest of all time in the ring, did get a chance to go out, did have this beautiful, beautiful ending. Which, as it should in wrestling, ends with a loss. But it's this beautiful emotional moment with Shawn Michaels in the ring. This is the I love you super kick moment that a lot of people know from WrestleMania years ago. And this was the final match. And because of a lot of decisions in his life, because a lot of who he came back too many times. And it's hard to – you watch that moment. It's like, well, there's just – it, the integrity of it is lost. A lot of integrity with him is lost. But with a band, I don't know. I could feel that. I didn't feel, I mean, I laugh now about the Kiss thing because it was so long ago. So long ago. But I can see where you absolutely would feel cheated.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's my final question for you, Ken. For anything that you have actually, whether you've announced it publicly or just told yourself, this is the last one, has there been something where you said, this is it, goodbye, and you truly have not come back? And if so, was that a good feeling? Is that a good thing?
I'm trying to think. I think I eventually got back to radio. I didn't know that was possible. I did. No, the only one that stuck is you know what's funny? The only one that stuck is not one that I announced to myself because, again, no one's paying attention to me, especially back then. But I have not returned to sketch comedy since my final show at the Groundlings in 2002. And I have not, and I lived and breathed it, and everything was a sketch to me. You know, that's a sketch. Mm-hmm. That's a sketch. Oh, that interaction with the barista. That's a sketch. That was me. And I'd never returned to it. It was a scar that needed to heal, and eventually did heal to a certain degree. But even then, that was about 2014. I was back visiting the Groundlings often when my friend was on the Sunday Company. I wasn't like, great, I'm going to go form a troupe. So that's the only thing. But because I didn't announce it. I didn't like, I just, that was a natural thing that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you feel about it right now? Do you feel good about it?
Good. Like- yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. 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 Yeah. I the memories are more powerful than what it actually was to me. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. I think there's a couple like specific shows, like not announcing, you know, I don't think I would ever announce that I'm done performing unless I literally physically couldn't. I have not been performing as much, but it's a huge part of who I am in my life. But I've had specific shows or events, like this is the last one. Mm-hmm. I know I've mentioned it fairly often because it was a big part of my life. My brother and I had this late night comedy variety show in Minneapolis called Look Mono Pants. It's very rowdy, like the Muppet shows, but naughty.
As it should.
And we decided it was done. It was a show for people in their 20s and, you know, maybe mid 30s. Some of our members were older. My brother was in his mid 30s. I was just turning 30 and we're like, it's time. It's run its course. And we announced a final show and I think we had, you know, 300 people in a theater with 200 seats and had people standing because it was monthly. So people came to it every month and it was people's traditions and people had made friendships and met, you know, partners and broken up with partners, you know, in the course of this show. It wasn't just about the show. It was about the community. And I've told this story before. This is the show where I tried to go out with a bang by proposing to my girlfriend at the time. It didn't work out, but it's fun because my now wife, Sarah, was in the audience. a complicated thing. But we went out big because the show was big. And we went out big. I think the show was like 3 hours and it started at 11:30. Jeez. We went out big, and there was a reviewer in Twin Cities, a theater critic who had championed us at times, but was also kind of infamous for being sharp. When he didn't like you, he was going to make a meal out of it and really make you feel it. And he wrote up a real nice thing about the final show and had a, but they'll be back in 5 years. And there, that was like, all right, buddy, all right, we'll see.
You can force me to retirement.
We'll see, buddy. And there's never been a reunion of that show. I've performed with many, many people in it, and I will again, and it'll always be a big part of my life. But it was a show that was that time of life. And it feels really good to have said, that was a then thing.
Yeah.
And capped it there. And moved on, which is a different thing. I think if you know, somebody, you know, if Kiss said, you know, we'll never do an acoustic show again, that's a little bit easier to maintain.
we'll
never be holograms, I guess, is a challenge for them.
Go ahead, please. Eras coming to an end makes a lot of sense to me as well. That's eras change for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it is personalities and conflicts and the documentary worthy backstage stuff, but the era of the Schmoes, we'll never return, but it was wonderful for what it was. You know, it was absolutely wonderful. We just never got to say goodbye in a proper way, but like by no one's fault, it just drifted away.
That's a great example. If you got a call to do a farewell tour of Schmoes, would you do it, or would you say that was then?
There is some conversations to be had, but I think it wouldn't feel right because it's such an era. It's an era thing.
Yeah. Well, I think if there is a Schmoes No tour and it's called Cash Grab, I think you should do it.
Well, I think I do need cash to grab, so yes.
All right. Before it gets too personal, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment with another music question.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
And we are back here on Cues of the Other, a special episode of Music Center. We had a great question about farewell tours. It got a little personal, as it often does. We'll see how personal this next question gets. It comes to us from Michael McCarcel. Michael says, you've all talked about your favorite musicians recently, but what are your favorite concerts that you've attended? For me, I have to say it was seeing Slipknot. They've been one of my favorites since around 2004 when I was first getting into metal as a kid. I finally got to see them live in 2015 with some of my best friends. Thanks and take care, FC friends. Thank you, Michael. This is great. Ken, you and I have we've talked about some of our favorite concerts. We've attended at least one concert together. Where do you go with this? Do you have a list of favorites?
I do. Well, are we saying there's a difference between concerts and shows here in this conversation?
I don't feel good about separating them.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
there's a technicality to it. Like, I know what when you say you're going to a concert versus I saw a show, I know the difference. But to me, when you're talking about live music emotionally, there's not a lot of difference. There's the big aspect of it versus the small and intimate. But yeah, okay. Just want to clarify that, because that in that case, you and I, Lady Gaga, Van William, and John Williams.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think, we have attended a lot. And that is a fascinating distinction between, like, I think a concert is a concert, whether it's in, you know, Dodger Stadium or, you know, a little club that seats 30 people. To me, it's you're experiencing something artistic, you know?
Yeah. And again, people would say, wow, but a concert, you're right. But for the sake of this, it has the same impact on me in my memories.
Yeah, absolutely. So, do you want to share you have two concerts? Is this easy or was this a challenge?
Oh no, I have 50. It was a challenge because unlike say like a Star Wars ranked or a Life ranked, like, you know, I've been fortunate to not have a bad concert experience in my life. I've had some – there was one time I saw Oasis at the Hollywood Bowl. This was mid-2000s, and I wasn't as connected with, like, artistic folks in my life or, you know, not that I divide those lines, but I was with some of my work buddies, and we went to the concert, and they weren't huge Oasis fans. They just went with me because I got the tickets, and that was – I was into it. They left. They were like, oh, we're going to go out and smoke. We'll come back. And I was, like, there by myself. It's like, so it's like when you're there, I'd rather then just go alone. I had a lady in my life during my radio days. I was trying to, you know, hopefully get her more into my life. And she was a big fan of the Bare Naked Ladies, as was I at the time. And they're a good band. So I got some tickets because, again, working on the radio, I got the Bogmen, who had a great hit in the mid-90s suddenly, and Bare Naked Ladies. And halfway through the show, she saw some friends over there, and she went, I'm going to go stand by them now. And I took in the rest of the show by myself. So other than those two experiences, I've had a great time, Joseph, so it's hard to choose.
Very, very hard to choose. I understand. I've had a couple concerts that where maybe I have been like, I'll come with you, but I'm not as into this mm-hmm. band or whatever. But other than that, I have not generally been – I'm trying to go more because I want to see people while you have an opportunity to see them because you never know. Mm-hmm. But I have not generally had bad concert experiences either. So this is a real challenge. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go first with one of your two or an honorable mention? Or?
First, I'm putting Lady Gaga in the Hall of Fame. You and I have spent a lot of time talking about it. So you can talk all you want. I'm going to put that one up there. Stones at SoFi, I just mentioned. So I'm going to put that up there. There was a great show I saw, it was again Oasis, but with Travis, and it was early 2000s, and Oasis was still packing a punch, but so was Travis, and they were in the biggest band of the world conversation for about a year or two, and that was the concert I saw Travis, Fran Healy, the lead singer. They did a cover of Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again. And it rocked me to the core because until that moment, I'd learned a little bit of my lessons with the Spice Girls. But until that moment, if the music wasn't packaged for me, I felt it didn't belong. It had no reason to exist, right? Which is a horrible way to look at music because it's all so personal. It all comes from our own experiences. And yes, some can be a cash grab or highly packaged. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of the super packaged pop groups. Totally get it. Valid conversation maybe for some, but I was one of those dumb Britney Spears fans. And Fran Healy goes we're going to sing this next song, and we're going to dedicate it to people who like music because it's a damn good song. And they went into Oops, I Did It Again. And about halfway through the song, I was like, I love this song. why am I denying myself the joy of this song? And that was a great experience. It was a fun show from start to beginning.
That's a really, really great one. We were both lucky to see Lady Gaga's Chromatica ball at Dodger Stadium, yeah. And that was a phenomenal concert, and definitely for me would have been in the running, but it got bumped by another Lady Gaga concert, so I'm not going to feel too terribly guilty about it. But that's one of my best experiences I know I talked about it a little bit on the show the week after I went, but going to Las Vegas to see Lady Gaga's jazz and piano concert. Mm-hmm. Dodger Stadium, obviously, a baseball stadium, huge, an epic art piece onto itself, as well as here I'm going to go onto this separate stage in the middle of the field and do my intimate piano songs with, you know, dazzling vocals. So even at the giant Dodger Stadium show with costumes and a million dancers, she still made it intimate because she's a great mm-hmm. performer that way. But there's a contrast to what she was doing in the Vegas show. Mm-hmm. Ken, how many people does Dodger Stadium seat? Do you know?
In the 56,000-57,000 range. Yeah.
Okay. So lots and lots of thousands versus this
many thousands.
The stage in Vegas sat 5,000 people specifically, and Lady Gaga treated it like, for her, coming off of a tour full of Dodger stadiums, this was an intimate little backroom show. Mm-hmm. And what was powerful for me about it is obviously. Big fan of Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. and that whole Rat Pack era, and I've always wanted you know, pined to have seen Vegas as it was back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to see a Vegas show knowing, I'll just go to whatever because I want to say I've gone to a show in Vegas, but it's not going to be like these ones back in the day that exist in my imagination. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that Lady Gaga was doing this jazz and piano show where she was going to be doing songs like that and emulating that style of show in, you know, what is now an intimate venue for Vegas to have a 5,000 seat theater. So and it was pricey. And when I first brought it up, my wife was like, we just saw her last year. And I get that she's going to be playing jazz standards and that will be cool or everything. But Vegas is expensive. This show is expensive. You want to sit even closer this time. What is this? And, you know, in those moments where a relationship is good, it's because you can try to take the time to understand why you want something and are able to explain it to a partner. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, I didn't think I'd ever get this opportunity. I didn't think I'd ever get to go to Vegas and not just hear those songs, but see that style of performance. That's this mood that it's late at night. It's a modern day and some video is going to leak out, but it's more like, I'm doing the stuff that I can't put on an album. Mm. I'm doing the stuff that only you in Vegas that are here at this show are gonna experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in explaining it to my wife of like my connection to Rat Pack in Vegas and like, this will be the best time I ever go to Vegas because I get to see this show. And she understood and we pinched her pennies and made the money. And then the show was just fabulous. A lot of times when modern musicians cover swing, big band, Tin Pan Alley, it can be done in this sort of like, we're playing the beats and I sing a note real high and the horn goes real high and I maybe say some patter that Dean Martin used to and it feels fake. And a lot of people hate it because it feels canned, like a robot repeating something authentic.
Yeah.
And I knew that Gaga was approaching it from, I am going to make it my own. And it's exactly what the show was. She took the style of that older performance, remixed it. She ad-libbed where other performers would ad-lib, but dropped F-bombs, which, you know, they wouldn't have done. They said naughty jokes that they could not say on television back in the day. But she had parts where she talked about her own life. She does a piano thing where she jokes about how many people did not understand the true meaning of poker face. Mm-hmm. So it's not just her being like, I'm doing that oldie time music in that oldie time way. It was fresh and vibrant and authentic and real. Mm-hmm. And two great horn players, you know, trading off doing solos. So for me, it was what I want in art that's looking backwards at all of it is celebrating the past well, absolutely making it personal, authentic, and moving to the future. Because I love a lot of old things, and I don't want to live in a museum. And we talk about this like Star Wars. Like, I want those old core ideas. I want to see a lightsaber, but I want to see a lightsaber like I've never seen before. Or like a lightsaber used in a way that only someone of Gen Y would relate to a lightsaber. So it's new. So you're not living in a museum. Yeah. And that's what it was a perfect blend of old and new. And she had these little video essays about the heart of Vegas and the history and about Vegas is crass and class and it always has been, but maybe we could have a little bit more class. So here's kind of a classy jazz show. And then at the end, she's like, now go get wild in Vegas. And like, it wasn't just a show. It was like a whole mood and send you off into the night. And my wife and I went and had a great night drinking weird cocktails out of bird shaped glasses. And it was great. Great night. Great show.
Yeah, so glad you got to experience that. I really wanted to hit this leg of the tour or this leg of it. She's done it a few times, I know, but and hopefully do it again. But everything you're saying is a reason to save up to experience that. And I love what you're talking about. That's the difference between a sketch about an old-timey singer and a performance pulling from the past and making it your own. I think that's a great way to look at it.
Wonderful. Yeah, really – telling a story with a song is is what made those performers great, and, and Gaga does a great, great job with that.
Yeah.
So that's one of mine. What's one of yours?
So I want, you know, I've seen some checklist artists. You know, I got the chance to see David Bowie in I always forget the date, but I think it was 04-05 range, which ended up being his final like big tour because of life and health and all those reasons, sadly. So I did get to see that, and that was wonderful. And I saw the Mark Ellis and I and another comedian, Tom Rhodes, went and saw the Stones, Rolling Stones at SoFi Stadium, which SoFi Stadium's amazing. It's this giant stadium. We walked in, and I was like, this is what it feels to be like on a Star Destroyer. It's like, it's just its own creation. And we saw the Stones there. And those are two wonderful. The Stones concert was amazing. They not only can they still bring it, just everyone around, it's generations of shared appreciation and joy and love for this band. So that was great. But I want to mention those two big ones to sneak them into the conversation, but highlight why I like going to shows. And there was a show I saw about a year ago now at a place locally here in town called the Moroccan Lounge near downtown L.A. Band Living More was headlining. Great L.A.-based band. They had a great radio single called Sharp. Check it out. They're wonderful. Dream Spaces, Kath Myers, who is a singer-songwriter who I absolutely just love. I saw her this past year, too. She can rock as well. There's a band on the show that it was like their first or second performance called Child Seed. Josiah Masacci and Madeline Matthews, who've come from other projects. And you got Bowie and the Stones, and that's where we all want to go. And it's hard. You can't break artists like you used to. It's not – the system's been destroyed. It's hard to get to that. But this band blew me away because Child Seat was on stage in front of 100 people squished in the Moroccan Lounge, and they were playing like we know we're as good as that point in our timeline. We're playing 15 years ahead. We're such a – they were such a confident band. They got a great pop rock style that's got some 80s retro mixed in it. It's got a little Cheap Trick in there. It's got a lot. It's got a lot of stuff and some 90s sensibilities. I could throw all the rock and roll journalist buzzwords at you. But but Madeline Matthews is a rock star on stage, singing and performing in a confident way that says we are here now and we're going to be here down the line. So either get on now or get on later. And it was just because either way, you're going to get on the train. And I love that band, Child Seat. I can't wait to see him again live. I had some close calls trying to get out to see him. Couldn't. And again, I don't know if bands will ever be, you know, unless you go viral. In fact, Madeline Matthews, actually, the lead singer, actually did a TikTok video trying to go viral. Like, how do we go viral on TikTok? Like, it was this funny little sketch because that's how bands break these days. And that's just the reality of it. But that was a fun experience. That's why I want to include that. That I know concert versus show. This was a show performed as if it was a concert. And in their mind, thousands of people were watching when there was really only 100.
Yeah, that's so great. That is extremely powerful. And I really relate to that. I got two more. And one of them is that intimate show like that. So I'll save that for last. But I have to celebrate old Guns N' Roses. Meant a lot to me as a kid. I bought Appetite for Destruction on my 14th birthday, and I fully intended to get the vinyl, but then I realized the cassette would be easier to hide from my parents. It's been a long road with old Guns N' Roses, and yeah, there's some of their songs and lyrics that I do not support. And there's some of their songs, one that's dropped from their catalog that they don't support anymore. Hey, caveats. But now they've turned into a marketing machine. There's I got a storybook for kids that Axl co-wrote called Sweet Child of Mine. And they sell, you know, baby jumpers like from having to hide the music from my parents to they sell baby jumpers on the internet. And I see families at every concert I go to. It's the world's a fascinating place. Lucky to see them. Technically four times. I saw them once when it was Axl with all of the not original people. I saw them at Dodger Stadium, which was fabulous. I saw them at the Forum, which was almost great, but a guy kept jumping up in front of my section to dance and blocking the view. It was maddening. I won't go into that. Anyway, so then I got to see them at Hollywood Bowl. just recently, and they were absolutely fabulous at the Hollywood Bowl.
Joseph, that's a great story about Guns N' Roses, and I was there for all of it. But some of you, we're doing video as well as podcasting. This has happened on the podcast before, where some reason or another, technical, we drop out and we do an edit, and it sounds like we've been there the whole time. But on video, it's harder to hide the fact that I just disappeared from the broadcast. So we're trying. But I loved hearing your stories about Guns N' Roses. I didn't hear nearly enough stories about Buckethead, but he was at least acknowledged in spirit. So we're back. I'm here.
Yes.
And it was wonderful.
Yes. And I was setting up my Guns N' Roses story, and you really disappeared just as I was about to start. So it made me feel as though you have finally heard enough about Guns N' Roses, which I will take as a cue from the universe and keep it short. Point being, I loved when you were talking about either ending up at concerts alone, or maybe you'd rather just go alone. I went to see them at Hollywood Bowl. I'd already seen them a couple times, but I went to Hollywood Bowl because if anybody who has had the opportunity to attend Hollywood Bowl, it's amazing because it is a world-famous venue. It's a great concert venue. But for people who are lucky enough to live here and want to live here in the Los Angeles area, it is also just like you're going down to the bandstand at the park in the summer to hear who's playing. It's a community thing. It's a neighborhood thing as well as a world-renowned institution. Yeah, so it's like, I got to experience the hometown Hollywood Boys and Melissa Reese, the keyboardist, at the hometown venue of Hollywood Bowl.
It's wonderful.
But Sarah couldn't come, and it was too close to invite anybody else. And I didn't know if I had anybody who would be the right person to go with me. So I was like, screw it. I'm going alone to see Guns N' Roses. And not only was the concert great, it was great to see them up close. They were so excited about being at Hollywood Bowl for the first time. They always localize when they're doing Welcome to the Jungle and the line of I Want to Hear You Scream. They always localize it. It'll be Cleveland, I Want to Hear You Scream. Or, you know, Sofia, Bulgaria, I Want to Hear You Scream. But Axl really putting his back to it of Hollywood, not Los Angeles, Hollywood, I Want to Hear You Scream. So that was great. But then just because I was there alone and I'd seen them a couple times, and sometimes I'd been like, I'm going to be like an art critic and I'm going to watch all their fun videos and I'm going to think about the themes of Guns N' Roses. I was like, dude, you're going to a concert. People are going to do wild bullshit around you.
Yeah.
You're there to dance, have a few beers. If you need to run to the bathroom, fine. People are going to talk to you during your favorite drum fills. Relax.
Do it, man.
It's a concert. It's to be experienced.
Yeah.
And I went in with that headset and just enjoyed the heck out of it. I think I ended up on an influencer's video dancing with her for Civil War. There's an extremely drunk 50-year-old couple making out next to me for half of it. He insisted on buying me a beer and left and never, ever came back. I think they got caught trying to have sex in the Hollywood Bowl bathroom and got kicked out.
Kicked out.
The music was great. The memories were great, but it was a great concert for me because I just said, it's an experience. It's not pristine. It's rough and ready. And that's the experience. And that's the spirit of that show. And I loved it for that.
Now I did drop out. You're talking about the John Williams of the Hollywood Bowl.
Exactly. You remember when John Williams did the Welcome to the Jungle?
Yeah, I did. No, that's wonderful. No. And it's a great way to, you know, rock the spirit of rock and roll. Might've started young, but it changes and grows with us, and you can still carry that youthful energy forward until you get caught and kicked out.
Yeah. So I want to hear about your next concert and see if I suddenly disappear.
No, I mean, I talked a lot recently about seeing Liz Phair at the Wiltern 30-year anniversary. Speaking of anniversaries, we've been talking about that this week with Phantom Menace and all that stuff. That was a special experience too, because I was luckily in the back row with our friend Dorina, Frank the editor, and Brian Tiller. And I got up and danced a couple times, but knowing that I wasn't blocking anyone, that's the only way I would do it. But it was fun. And I talked about it on the show. I'll highlight it here. It wasn't just simple nostalgia. There was some nostalgia baked in. It's a 30-year anniversary of a very important album, Exile in Guyville. But it was, hey, let's all meet up again in 30 years and really kind of share the stories about, hey, this is where we were then, this is where we are now, and all the hell and joys and successes and failures in between. And you felt that, and Liz felt that, and the fans were there. And Dave Perner from Soul Asylum did a walk on it. He actually was hanging out in, right next to us for a while. It was amazing. And it wasn't just simply, you know, hey, man, we're going back to the 90s and let's rock. It was about the journey that began then and is now here. And that was something special. I was driving there. I was listening to the album in my car. And it's just like I was hearing it again for the first time type of vibe. Where it's like, I remember the moment. I remember what this meant to me. And here I am now, right? And that was the spirit. And that was really fun. And the Wiltern is such a great historic venue here in L.A., but it's not giant, right? It's not giant. And exactly what you're describing, the Hollywood Bowl has that, hey, let's have some wine and a picnic and go see a great show of all kinds. You know, there's a lounge downstairs, there's a bar, there's people who like weren't even going in to watch the opening act, which does drive me crazy. Blanchot was performing, she's great. But the vibe was there. Just we're all here hanging out and Liz happens to be here playing an album that changed the music industry. It really, really did, in 1993, and that was part of the vibe as well.
Yeah, no, that is a great one. And you were able to enjoy it as a concert and also kind of reflect on your own emotional journey via Liz Phair, right?
With each song. And she didn't do a lot of banter in the middle, but she's very poignant. Her book, Horror Stories, which is the first memoir she's done. I think she's got another one coming out, is like this too, where she's a very good storyteller, very good writer, and just gets to the point of things. And she had a little speech prepared, a little memorized thing about, you know, the journey and how you just want to get here. But when you get here, and I'm paraphrasing, you look back and like that's what made you, and who you were then is what started, you know, starts this journey out. Anyways, it was all pretty poignant. But in the meantime, I'm also drinking and dancing like a fool. Hurt my back. I couldn't stand for like 4 days after the show, which is also to me the sign of a good show, but also the sign that maybe it should be your farewell tour.
Yes, that 30 years have gone by. Yeah, I felt that in the Guns N' Roses show too, and I think it is. But it's not just about hearing, you know, great music or seeing like how do they do this song differently live. Mm-hmm. It is about that kind of that time travel via art. And yeah, there's some songs that like, this makes me smell my basement that I lived in. I listened to this song and tried to, you know, lift weights, you know, in between eighth and ninth grade so I could, you know, look cooler. Yeah. But then up to like, they just released a new song that happened to drop on my birthday. Mm. And I really like that song. And unlike the stereotype, wanted to, like, I hope they play the new songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got up and sang along to the newest new song because I was thrilled to hear it. And a lot of people around me left. They were gone. And it's funny because the song has a repeated lyric, "You're all alone now." And it was like, I don't care. I'm going to be defiant and stand here pretty much alone in my row because everyone went to the bathroom to get a new beer during their newest song and sing "You're all alone now." And like emotional journey at concert.
There's something in that what you're describing and talking about with you're invested in an artist, no matter how big they are. You know, Rolling Stones, little blues cover band that did all right for themselves, right? you're there for the journey. And that the Stones at SoFi and this, I don't even know what it seats, 75,000 plus, I don't know. That could be horribly impersonal, but it wasn't. Everyone there was invested with them, and some had been on that ride with that band since the 60s. And I've been on the, you know, Liz Phair is a very, though she's well known in some circles, she's also not. And it's like the people in attendance, we've been on this journey with her. We feel as though you're a pal, you know, and that the parasocial relationship certainly can be dangerous. But no matter how big, if that energy's there, it's just another chapter in the story of your relationship with that music and that artist. So it's Stones in front of 75,000 or, you know, Child Seat in front of 100. That's what it's about.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Do you have any other concerts you wanted to shout out?
Look, I could go on and on and on and remember some I'm not even remembering right now. They'll pop up, but yeah, it's a great question. And I'm blessed to say that I haven't had a ton of bad experiences. No one dancing in front of me yet.
Yeah, and I look forward to having more. I want to shout out just quickly an intimate, much smaller experience than Dodger Stadium or SoFi or even Hollywood Bowl. There is a performer named Elvez, which I think you've probably heard of Elvez. Yeah, the Mexican Elvis is the way he bills himself. He's been doing shows for years and years and years. Back in the year 1998, when I worked at Kinko's, now FedEx office, Kinko's in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis. It's very close to the Club First Avenue, which anybody who likes Prince or music from Minneapolis knows First Avenue. They used to come into Kinko's to get all of their flyers made. And if they liked you, they would give you tickets if they could. Physical tickets. They would hand you physical tickets, not put you on a list for shows to the Kinko's workers. So I was hanging out with a lot of people at Kinko's. Other workers were way hipper than me and knew all the cool new bands and knew what to ask for. And we'd get these tickets and physical sparkly tickets, like look like Willy Wonka, chocolate tickets. And I just kind of fell out of it and shy. And then I was trying to date a woman, a dancer named Sarah. But not my wife, Sarah, who is a dancer. Different dancer named Sarah. I guess I have a type. Told me that she really liked this Elvez. And I realized he's going to be at First Avenue. And I remember being like, hello, I can help you with your copies, Mr. First Avenue. Could I have some Elvez tickets? And was so proud of myself because it was such an adult thing of like, I'm going to get tickets to a rock concert to impress a lady. So I got the tickets. And then it ended up that her cats were sick that night. Oh. And instead of going to the concert, she wanted help giving her cats pills. So skipped Elvez. We had a great night. The relationship didn't go well, but it was a great night. And so Elvez has lived large in my memory for years of the concert I almost saw. Recently, I have some friends who work with him, who know him. I got to see a mini Elvez concert in a tiny venue, and it was worth the 20 plus years wait. Just a fabulous performer. He is playing the joke of this is loud, fast. It is kind of Elvis, but not really. And this was holiday themed, but just an expert, consummate performer. The band was incredibly tight. There was nothing to worry about of the music, but the way he performed it was this great comedy way of like, at any moment, everything could fall apart. And it gave it this great energy. He had a bit where loud, fast, swinging Christmas music. He's joking with the audience. And then he just yells out, "Pretend I'm ice skating." And does these dance moves pretending to ice skate. And like, that is perfection to me. When the music is so tight that you can be wild and make the audience feel like everything's going to fall apart any second, but it's not because you know exactly what you're doing. That's Elvis. That was amazing.
I remember first hearing him in the mid-90s. My friend was obsessed with the fact that there was someone going around performing as Elvis. He used to mention it every week. I love that. I love that. Great reference.
Great experience. So there you go. There's some of our concert experiences. We are going to wrap up. Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. Thanks for listening here. Thanks for going down these musical journeys and adventures and memories with us. You can find us on Twitter and Threads at Four Center Pod. We're on Instagram as well. Facebook page is Four Center Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe over on YouTube. And you can hear us on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4Center. And patreon.com/4Center is where you can support us directly. Follow me at Ken Knapsack or go to KenKnapsack.com for more information. It is the new year and new things will be happening, but you can go visit some of the things I did this year, comedy albums, music albums, and more. Joseph, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the various social media. At Joseph Scrimshaw is my handle everywhere. Hopefully have some more news about short films and film festivals coming up this year, 2024. You can also check out my old comedy albums on my website by going to josephscrimshaw.com. So please do that. We are excited to tackle many more questions of all kinds in this coming year, this new year of 2024. But for now, we have Aid the Cube.
Podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.